Welcome to the BreastCancer.org podcast, the podcast that brings you the latest information on breast cancer research, treatments, side effects, and survivorship issues through expert interviews, as well as personal stories from people affected by breast cancer. Here's your host, BreastCancer.org Senior Editor, Jamie DiPolo.
Hello and thanks for listening. Ashish Khanna, MD, is a physical medicine and rehabilitation specialist at the Kessler Institute for Rehabilitation and part of the Revital Cancer Rehabilitation Program. He completed his residency in physical medicine and rehabilitation at the Kingsbrook Jewish Rehabilitation Institute in Brooklyn, New York, where he became interested in cancer rehabilitation early on. He completed his fellowship subspecialization in cancer rehabilitation at MedStar Georgetown University and the National Rehabilitation Hospital in Washington, D.C. Dr. Khanna specializes in the treatment of people who have pain or functional issues as a result of cancer or cancer treatment, including people who have been diagnosed with breast cancer. This includes pain, shoulder issues, fatigue, joint pain from aromatase inhibitors, and other issues. He has lectured at numerous international conferences, has published peer-reviewed research on a variety of related topics, and is the co-author of an upcoming book on cancer rehabilitation. Today, he joins us on the podcast to talk about a topic that is extremely important to him and I know is important to many of our visitors, which is pain caused by aromatase inhibitors and how that pain can be managed. Dr. Khanna, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. I'm happy to be back.
So just in case anybody listening isn't familiar with aromatase inhibitors, can you explain what those medicines are and how they're used to treat breast cancer?
Yeah, sure. So aromatase inhibitors are used in hormone receptor positive breast cancers. Those are basically the ones that are estrogen or progesterone positive, and you'll usually hear this as ERPR positive. And basically what that means is that if you imagine like a breast cancer cell, on its surface, it has a lot of different receptors for a lot of different things. But one of the receptors it has is for estrogen and or progesterone. So basically, anytime some estrogen binds to that cell, it causes that tumor to grow. So basically, the tumors are essentially fed by estrogen or progesterone. What we're essentially doing here is that in order to treat that breast cancer, then we need to lower the level of estrogen in the body, right? So how do we do that? Well, as it turns out, estrogen is being made in the peripheral tissues, like all the different fat cells, a little bit in the liver, things like that. And they're taking some different hormones and an enzyme called aromatase that lives in that area. It converts estrogen precursors into estrogen. So essentially what this medication is going to do is it's going to turn off that enzyme and stop that conversion. So in the end, that cuts down the level of estrogen that's circulating in your body. And this causes a lot of different problems. One of them is the joint pain that we're going to talk about today, which, you know, as you mentioned, is definitely an important topic and one I think, you know, a lot of people aren't really aware of. But basically what that does is it causes kind of like a chemically induced menopause in a way, right? When we go through menopause, our estrogen levels drop, and this is a chemically, and this is a medicine, menopause in a pill, I guess. Mm-hmm. So you do get a lot of the menopause symptoms that you get for the same reason, but particularly you get joint pains with these. There are three inhibitors, the three most common ones that you'll see are anastrozole, which is also called Arimidex. There's exemestane, which is aromacin, and then there's letrozole, which is also called Femara. And the idea is that after you have breast cancer, if you take these medications, it's chemo preventative. So it's basically going to prevent your breast cancer from coming back. So when we treat breast cancer, we want to make sure that all of the cancer is gone. We don't want to leave any cells or a minimum amount of cells if possible. So after your breast cancer is treated, then afterwards, you usually take these medicines to prevent your breast cancer from coming back. And the thinking was to do it for 5 years. Now people are thinking 10 years for some people might be better. So you take it for 10 years after being treated for breast cancer for those people who have ERPR positive breast cancers.
Okay, and I'm glad you mentioned the length of time that someone might take it, because I've seen studies suggesting that about 50% of women, I believe all the studies were in women, not men, prescribed aromatase inhibitors after breast cancer surgery either don't take them or don't take them regularly because of these side effects you're talking about. And as far as I know, joint pain and joint stiffness is the most common with an aromatase inhibitor. So why is it that that the aromatase inhibitors cause this joint pain? Because I know there's another medicine, tamoxifen, which is given to premenopausal women.
Right.
And it doesn't seem to cause the same joint stiffness. So what is it about an aromatase inhibitor that works in the joints this way?
So tamoxifen is similar to aromatase inhibitor, I guess you could say, in broad strokes. One of the big differences is that we usually give aromatase inhibitor to postmenopausal females, and premenopausal females are the ones who get tamoxifen. So if you haven't gone through menopause, you're more likely to get tamoxifen. Tamoxifen works a little bit differently. So if you think about it, when before menopause, the main source of your estrogen is going to be your ovaries, right? When you're premenopausal, your estrogen is coming mostly from your ovaries. When you're postmenopausal, most of your estrogen is coming from the tissues outside, in your fat cells and things like that. That's where the aromatase inhibitor itself works. So if you're premenopausal, we need to address the source of estrogen differently. And that's what tamoxifen does, because premenopausally, you know, the source of estrogen is from a different place. So that's one difference. Now, if you're postmenopausal, that doesn't mean you can't be treated with tamoxifen. You can still use tamoxifen in postmenopausal breast cancer, but you don't see that as often. But both of them do cause joint pains, like you said. Tamoxifen less so to some degree, but the aromatase inhibitors as a class also do that. Studies show, like you said, that 50% of women roughly are going to report new or worsening joint symptoms. That can go as high as 75% of people, and about 37% of people who take tamoxifen report it. So you see it in both, but definitely more so in the aromatase inhibitors. And then, you know, the reason why we think that happens is essentially estrogen deprivation. So you have, as it turns out, women have estrogen receptors in the cartilage and in the synovial lining of their joints. So you have estrogen receptors in your joints. And if you turn off the estrogen, if you turn off the faucet of the estrogen, then you do get more like arthritis type of symptoms. It's not exactly the same as osteoarthritis because the cause is different, right? Osteoarthritis happens in a lot of the weight-bearing bones and things like that, where you get kind of a bone-on-bone is how people usually think about it. This is different. It feels like arthritis, but it's anatomically a little bit different than that. And it just causes some swelling there. And just like arthritis, it can cause some fluid in the joints. The difference between osteoarthritis and the arthritis caused by aromatase inhibitors, the aromatase inhibitors can happen in small joints. You get them in the wrist, you get them in the hands. The wrist and hand is actually the most common place where people get it. About 60% of people who have these issues will report it in the wrist and hand, and then about the same amount to the knee. Some people will feel it in their spine. Next most common is the ankle or the foot, and then last is actually the hip. So in arthritis, the hip is very common, right? Your hip bone holds a lot of your body's weight, but the wrist and hand in this case is probably the most implicated in addition to the knee.
Interesting.
And I see that. And I see that in the clinic for sure. These kind of statistics and epidemiological stuff definitely jives with what I see in the clinic. And the other thing I wanted to mention really quick too is, you know, if you already have arthritis, you know, the aromatase inhibitor is most likely going to make that worse, unfortunately. So if you already have, or anything, if you have, like, you know, if you have hip arthritis, or you already have some arthritis in your spine that's causing you problems, or in the knee or anywhere, that probably is going to make it worse. It's not only arthritis. If you have something like carpal tunnel, even something like that, you can see where it makes the carpal tunnel syndrome worse and things like that too. So that's the unfortunate part of it.
I guess I'm just curious, and the research may not have been done, but do we have any idea why, like, the hands and the wrists seem to be the most common place for this type of pain?
You know, I don't know the answer to that. That's a good question. I'm not aware of that. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, and I'm not sure exactly why.
That's fine. And you mentioned that if you have arthritis already, an aromatase inhibitor can make it worse. So it would seem that those particular women would likely be at higher risk for joint pain from an aromatase inhibitor. But are there any other factors that might put someone at higher risk, because and I'm just going by the comments we get on our discussions boards, where some women it's excruciating and they do have to stop taking the medicine or switch to a different one.
Right.
And other women say, no, you know, it really wasn't that bad. So I'm just, you know, I'm wondering if there are any other risk factors besides like a pre-existing arthritis.
I mean, it may have a genetic component. Some women have more estrogen receptors in the joints than other women do. There's certainly that, you know, not everybody's built the same and not everybody's going to respond to the medications differently. It's the same like menopause, you know, no two women are going to go through menopause the same. And this is kind of like a chemically induced menopause, like I said. So the effects are going to vary, and having, you know, a wide variety of symptoms, especially anything that involves the endocrine system, you know, everybody is responsible their hormones differently, and different levels of this cause different things. So I think that's probably the primary reason, because, you know, we're just talking similar to menopause. If you have arthritis going in, that's likely to get worse. Sometimes people are, you know, they have they still have the arthralgias, or they still have the joint pain from chemotherapy. So if you still have the joint pain from the chemotherapy that you went through, that's going to make that worse. If you have any other underlying kind of pain syndromes, like fibromyalgia. Fibromyalgia is like a sort of a centralized kind of pain disorder that can make your fibromyalgia worse. And then the last thing would be if you had a rheumatological, rheumatoid arthritis, or any of the other kind of if you have any other rheumatological problem, that can make that worse as well. So if you have any of those underlying things, and you know, a number of others, that's just sort of off the top of my head. But if you have, you know, those kinds of pre-existing issues, then the aromatase inhibitor will most likely make that worse. And you know, and while we're talking about things that vary, the different aromatase inhibitors may affect you differently too. So it's a great conversation to have between you and your oncologist about perhaps switching to a different one. And most oncologists are going, you know, if your symptoms are that bad, they're going to already consider switching you to something else. But, you know, there are indications. So you can't always be switched to something else, of course. That's why I have to discuss it with the oncologist. It's up to the oncologist, obviously. They're the ones who know all the information about your particular type of cancer and the studies that show, you know, which one is best for you to prevent your cancer from coming back. But there's some evidence, particularly with exemestane, one of the ones I mentioned. With exemestane, some studies are showing that that has less joint pain symptoms. Like I said, not everybody can take that one, but it's, you know, something to mention or bring up with the oncologist.
Certainly. And now this is sort of the key question for this whole podcast is, how is this pain treated? I know there are medicines that people can take, but I've also seen some studies showing that exercise can help, acupuncture can help. What do you recommend?
The best evidence that we have for the aromatase inhibitors is going to be exercise, like you said. Now, asking somebody who has joint pain to exercise is going to be very difficult, of course. And that's why there are professionals to help you through those kinds of things. Particularly would be if you can find a cancer rehabilitation medicine physician like myself, like a physiatrist. We can certainly help you with that. That's our area of expertise. Unfortunately, there are not that many of us in the country. But there are a lot of wonderful occupational and physical therapists who can help you with this type of thing. And they can make a personalized exercise program for you. You know, they have these strategies called joint protection strategies. You know, if you have a painful joint, they can basically work around that. So they can help you do, some therapy for it. But otherwise, there are some studies showing that just plain old aerobic exercise, just getting moving, can make a difference. So if you can do 150 minutes a week of aerobic exercise, like moderate intensity exercise, and I usually say moderate intensity exercise would be if you're exercising to the level that you can still hold a conversation, right? You're not completely out of breath. But if you can maintain that, you know, for 30 minutes a day, ideally 5 days a week or even 3 days a week, then that would be great. And then
so something like brisk walking, like if you were walking pretty fast with a friend and you could talk.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. Especially doing it with a friend and things like that is great. Those have been shown in multiple studies, even large randomized studies, can decrease the reported pain that people have even 12 months later, so even 1 year later. I think what I forgot to mention, I guess, would be that the time frame of when you start. So usually you start to feel these joint symptoms about 6 weeks after you start the aromatase inhibitor, and they can worsen over the course of the first year. But generally after the first year, or, you know, these are kind of vague numbers, but over the course of the first year, typically the symptoms start to stabilize and may improve a little bit. So what they say is it's going to get worse at about 6 weeks. And then, you know, the worst period of it will probably be in the first year. But for them, if you can stick through it, I guess, is what I'm trying to say, it may get better after the 1 year mark. So the exercise is what we have is the best evidence. The other things that you can do are kind of like the standard sort of, I guess, arthritis treatments. If you can take an NSAID, you know, ibuprofen, non-NSAID would be Tylenol, which works well. And then there is some evidence of acupuncture working well, too. I do have a couple patients who do acupuncture and say it works well. I have some that do it and say it didn't really make a difference. So, you know, it just kind of depends. That one's, for, you know, that's like a complementary and alternative medicine, you know. So the science isn't as robust for those kinds of treatments. But if it works, you know, it's worth a shot, definitely. Mm-hmm. For some people, it does work. There are some medications that you can discuss with your doctor, too. Probably the strongest evidence we have medication-wise would be for something called duloxetine or Cymbalta. That's been shown in a really high-level study in the Journal of Clinical Oncology to improve the worst joint pain. So the joint that bothers you the most, it can decrease that. It can decrease joint stiffness. And then it also can decrease the pain that interferes with your life and keeps you from functioning. So that's pretty good.
Mm-hmm. And Cymbalta, I want to ask, that's an antidepressant. Is that correct?
Yeah, okay. That's right. Yeah, a lot of the medications we use for pain were originally designed for something else. And actually, Cymbalta is still used to treat depression also as well. So, you know, maybe one of the side effects for you might be a mood elevation, right? Mm-hmm. I do tell patients that you know, you may have your mood may improve as a side effect. You know, for nerve pain, a lot of people take gabapentin. That was originally a medication for seizures, mm-hmm. but it actually works for nerve pain much better. We have much better medications for seizures now. But so a lot of these kinds of things were designed for one thing, but work really well for something else.
Are there any other sort of complementary techniques or other medicines that might be helpful for someone having this joint pain?
Yeah, especially if you have pre-existing joint pain, whatever kind of worked for you, I would say would probably work for this as well. Using heat, bracing, like I said, if you see a physical or occupational therapist, it's a great idea for this issue. I send, you know, a lot of patients to physical or occupational therapy, and you know, and I get the cases of the people who just said, you know, like you said, like on the forums and a lot of people listening where they just, you know, they've had enough. It's, you can't function. You can't do anything. It's really, you know, you're so stiff in the morning and, you know, people have busy lives and busy and, you know, a lot of things to do. So it does interfere with their life quite a bit, which is too bad. If you're taking tamoxifen, you can't take Cymbalta. Your doctor probably knows that, but you definitely should advocate for yourself. So those of you who are on tamoxifen, you cannot take duloxetine unless you get your doctor's permission. And there's a reason for that. The tamoxifen, if you're taking Cymbalta, the tamoxifen doesn't work as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
Definitely good to know.
Yeah, definitely. I'm glad I remembered to throw that in there.
I'm curious about the exercise, too. Is it possible, say, if someone is a regular exerciser and has been, and then she is diagnosed with breast cancer, goes through treatment, it's hormone receptor positive disease, is being a regular exerciser, is there any protection in that? Like, could that make somebody less likely to have joint pain from an aromatase inhibitor, or is that research not been done?
It has been done, and that has been shown to be the case. It's actually the case in all the different forms of arthritis, osteoarthritis, rheumatoid arthritis, and then you know, this sort of arthritis that's caused by the aromatase inhibitors. Using the joints keeps them moving. It keeps them, you know, well lubricated and, you know, just kind of keeps the joints happy in that way. So people who are able to move and able to do more and exercise more, which I understand is not always the easiest thing to do. But whatever you're able to do is beneficial. They show, you know, there's a response to even a little bit of exercise. And, you know, if you have arthritis and you have it in the weight-bearing joints and the aromatase inhibitors made your back pain worse or your hip pain worse or your knee pain worse or ankles, then, the pool is a great way to do some exercise for those people who have access to a pool. That's a great way because, you know, you're much lighter on your feet in the swimming pool and you're able to do a lot more of the exercise that way and have less pain. And there are some, you know, physical therapy and occupational therapy places that have a pool. So that's one option.
I was just going to say, is the best place to find, you talked about finding an occupational therapist or a physical therapist that's familiar with joint pain caused by aromatase inhibitors and kind of developing a plan. It is like going to your cancer care facility and asking either the oncologist or the oncology nurse navigator or someone like that, the social worker, is that the best place to start to find somebody like that?
Yeah. So if, yeah, definitely. If the therapists who are tied to a cancer center or tied to a hospital may be more familiar with this condition than other people would be, for sure. And then for those of you, place where I work, the hospital I work with, which is Kessler, is involved with Select Medical, and they have a service called Revital Cancer Rehabilitation, which is Revital, R-E-V-I-T-A-L, cancerrehab.com, and you can see if maybe there's, and those therapists are certainly trained in this, and a number of different issues involving breast cancer, head and neck cancer, all sorts of different things. So if you live near one of those therapists, you could reach out to them. But any sort of cancer center, the therapist would be probably most likely be seeing other patients with the same issue.
Okay, good to know. Now, finally, I guess I'm wondering if there's kind of like a step-by-step process. So if a woman came to you on an aromatase inhibitor, was having joint pain, like what do you do first, second, and third? Like, how do you approach this?
What we want to do is make sure that your joint pain can't be treated in some other way. So if you have hip pain or you have knee pain or wrist pain or something like that, then those can be treated with those different types of medications and also injections too. So you can do steroid injections. You know, they have the gel shots for the knee if the knee is bothering you and things like that. So that's one of the major things. The other things that I try to do is to make sure that you don't have another underlying problem, like you don't have rheumatoid arthritis and things like that. So sometimes I'll send people for a blood test and, just to make sure that you don't have rheumatoid arthritis. There are studies showing that people who have an aromatase inhibitor, sometimes people had an underlying rheumatological problem the whole time. And then, like I said, you know, a lot of these things develop over time on or, you know, 10 years is a long time and everybody gets older over 10 years. So you can develop other problems, too. So it's good to have kind of close follow up with your doctor for those types of things.
Dr. Khanna, thank you so much. I really appreciate your time and your insights.
Sure. My pleasure. Thanks for bringing some attention to this important topic. I appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to the breastcancer.org podcast. Please subscribe on iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts. To share your thoughts about this or any episode, email us at podcast@breastcancer.org or leave feedback on the podcast episode landing page on our website. And remember, you can find a lot more information about breast cancer at breastcancer.org, and you can connect with thousands of people affected by breast cancer by joining our online community.